From our nation's capital, this is Naps Chat.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you.
Hi, and welcome to this week's episode of Naps Chat. I'm Bob Levy, the Director of Legislative and Political Affairs for the National Association of Postal Supervisors. Before we engage in this week's chat, I would like to note that at a government pension offset windfall elimination provision repeal rally, which took place outside the U.S. Senate office building, Senator Majority Leader Chuck Schumer announced that a vote is forthcoming on the repeal legislation, which is strongly supported by NAPS, among other public employee and retiree associations. Let's now turn to our topic of the day. Over the past few weeks, the Postal Service and its Postmaster General has been subjected to three independent and intensive examinations of the Delivering for America initiative, the Postal Service's 10-year plan. First by the Postal Regulatory Commission, second by the Senate Committee on Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs, and the last one by the House Committee on Oversight and Accountability. What has come under relentless scrutiny at these public hearings has been the anemic postal performance since the plan began and the agency's feeble financial condition. On this week's podcast, we're going to be talking about these public hearings, their impact, if any, on the Postal Service or on Congress, or its effect on public confidence in America's most trusted government service. With me to talk about these issues is Jory Heckman, the Federal News Network correspondent covering postal and federal issues. Jory was with us this past spring, so this is a return engagement for him. In addition to covering postal issues in print and on the online medium, Jory hosts the radio program All About Data, a program and podcast on the interaction of data and the government. Jory began working with the Federal News Network in 2014. He's a former chairman of the National Press Club's Young Members Committee and continues to be an active member of the National Press Club. In fact, we are taping this episode of Naps Chat in a National Press Club studio in downtown Washington. So welcome back to Naps Chat, Jory, and thanks for making available the Press Club studio.
Thanks for having me back. Good to be back. And I always like having you on my home turf here. We recorded the last one at our studios and for Federal News Network and for WTOP.
Well, now we've gone national. Let's hit the ground running, Jory. Based on your reporting and the reporting of your colleagues, why do you think, or do you think, there has been a high degree of bipartisan criticism of the Delivering for America plan?
Well, Bob, I think the last time I was on Naps Chat, I said something to the effect of the mail and the Postal Service being one of these issues where all politics is local. And I think that's just continued to be the case here, where we have seen, regardless of party, an impact in mail service that members of Congress, senators are receiving more constituent complaints about that than really anything else, that they constantly hear about mail service being degraded, particularly in these areas where USPS is rolling out its network modernization efforts. And regardless of your party here, that they would like that to turn around, that the numbers need to look better before they can get on board with these changes.
In the past, when members of Congress or senators used to criticize the Postal Service for poor local performance, they were doing so anecdotally. Now there's actual data to demonstrate the reduction in performance. Do you think they're paying attention to that data that's available not only on the Postal Regulatory Commission website, but is available through the Postal Service itself?
Yeah, well, I think at both the House and Senate hearings, you saw some members come out with the large oversized placards with some of these charts pulling this data, showing pretty visually and pretty obviously that service is not where it was, and that in places where it did nosedive for a period, that it has not fully rebounded to where these members would like it to be. I think of Senator John Ossoff talking about the greater Atlanta area and him saying that there was a time in the spring when mail service, like 35% of first class mail, was being delivered on time there, and it's improved somewhat. It's in the 75 to 80% range, he said, but that's not anywhere close to what he'd like to see for the foreseeable future.
I'd like to turn to a different topic. We're going to cover a lot of ground today, and that is three transitions that are going to be occurring very shortly. First, at the Postal Regulatory Commission, Mike Kubianda will be handing over the Postal Regulatory Commission gavel as chairman to either Ann Fisher or Robert Taub, because President Trump will get to designate a Republican as the chairman of the PRC. We're going to see Gary Peters, the senator from Michigan, yielding his gavel at the Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee of the Senate to Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky. And on the House side, on the Democratic side of the committee, we have seen Jamie Raskin move over to the House Judiciary Committee, opening up a slot for either Jerry Conley or for Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who could be the next ranking member there. These transitions, what does that mean for the Postal Service? What does it mean for postal employees?
I'll take those in the order you presented them, Bob. I think over at the Postal Regulatory Commission, what we've seen recently at a hearing that they held on the Postal Service's upcoming regional transportation optimization plans, that the commission across the board is concerned about the direction the Postal Service is taking here. I think you heard from just about every member of the commission express some concern, particularly for rural America and what this would mean for them. Now, I know that Postmaster General Louis DeJoy and members of USPS management have pushed back, saying that this is not disproportionately impacting rural America, but the commission sees this a different way, and they're telling a different story, that they are all concerned that this is something that is going to have a disproportionate impact to rural communities, that these are communities that rely heavily on mail service, that these are communities where, you know, mail-in prescriptions are much more of a thing, that it's a vital lifeline for a lot of folks and a lot of communities out there. So that's number one. Number two, the switch from Senator Gary Peters to Senator Rand Paul. I think Senator Paul's made it pretty clear that he's frustrated with the Postal Service, that there have been all these different reform efforts legislatively, and that there's been some appropriated funds going to the Postal Service, and to little avail to his point of view. So I'm not necessarily sure that this is going to be high on his priority list. The Senate Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee covers a lot of different things, the federal government more broadly, Homeland Security more narrowly, and somewhere along the lines the Postal Service comes in here and there. So I don't expect this to be something that Senator Paul's going to expend a lot of political capital on. And then, of course, you mentioned the ranking member for the House Oversight and Accountability Committee. Congressman Jerry Conley has been very keen on postal issues, has been a vocal voice on a lot of and a critic of where the Postal Service has been headed in recent months. And so that could be something that we could expect to see going forward here.
What about if Congresswoman Ocasio-Cortez is the ranking member?
Yeah, so, you know, it's unclear to me just where the Postal Service fits in her overall portfolio of issues. Of course, she has sat in on a number of postal hearings, being a member of the House Oversight Committee, and I know that she's raised some pointing questions to the Postmaster General about where things are going. So this is obviously the kind of thing that all members of Congress hear about in some way, shape, or form, and certainly have opinions on the direction of the Postal Service.
I want to turn to something that happened actually today. It was reported in the Washington Post by one of your colleagues that the Postal Service's electric vehicle deployment has not gone according to plan. In fact, they've only deployed 93 or 97 some odd vehicles thus far out of the 3,000 that should have been deployed. And yesterday at a hearing, there appeared to be an attempt by House Republicans to claw back or to reclaim the $3 billion that was allocated to the Postal Service for vehicle modernization. How do you think those issues coalesce?
Well, I think this gives these members of Congress all the ammunition they need to further intensify their efforts to claw this kind of money back. And there have been also reports that the incoming Trump administration has some opinions about an electric fleet at the Postal Service, that there have been some reports from Reuters as well that, you know, there may potentially be some executive orders to that effect stepping into some of these contracts that the Postal Service has already agreed to. And it's unclear how much influence any administration would have in the independent operations of the Postal Service. Of course, we have seen things go the other way, right? The current Biden administration has put up money, which incentivized the Postal Service to care more about electric vehicles. So this reporting from Jacob Bogage at the Washington Post, tremendous job from him. Hats off to him doing this important work. But it really is eye-opening to the extent of where the Postal Service is with electric vehicles, not as far as anyone expected them to be at this point. And I think you're going to continue to get some really pointed questions to the Postmaster General and to postal management of how is it that we got here where the output of these electric vehicles, these custom-built next-generation delivery vehicles that are electric-powered, how is it that we only have 93 of them when there should have been 3,000 at this point?
I can recall at a number of Board of Governors meetings where representatives from the United Automobile Workers Union, who hail from Wisconsin, were decrying the movement of the manufacturer of the vehicles from a union plant in Wisconsin to some type of facility in South Carolina that was not as of yet constructed. How do you think this plays into that made in Wisconsin move with regard to electronic vehicles, that maybe South Carolina was not up to the task?
Well, I think, again, it gives them ammunition and intensifies their frustrations with the direction things have been going. Because from the perspective, it's why would you reinvent the wheel when there's already the capacity, the infrastructure to continue to manufacture vehicles in Wisconsin? Why build an entirely new facility from scratch to start manufacturing these EVs? I think the frustration is felt pretty palpably from them as well.
You mentioned that all politics is local, invoking the mantra of former Speaker Tip O'Neill. And I found interesting at the hearing, House hearing, Congressman William Timmons of South Carolina, he represents the congressional district where this new facility is being located, despite that fact, not being too keen on electronic vehicle construction in his district.
Yeah, I did find that interesting that despite, parochial interests of this plant being the site where these next generation vehicles were being manufactured, that he didn't seem all too enthusiastic for the Postal Service to continue with this electric fleet. I think perhaps this recent reporting from the Washington Post maybe does shine a little bit of a light on things, that this is not the robust manufacturing effort that some folks thought it would be, that if they are, as the Post reports, producing about one electric vehicle a day, as opposed to dozens, as they should be, that perhaps this is not the kind of congressional district win that you'd expect it to be.
Let's talk a little bit about the hearings generally. And that was that the criticism of members of Congress of the Postmaster General and his management of the Postal Service. And the Postmaster General, as expected, push back on that criticism, and he deflected blame to Congress. In fact, numerous times at the House hearing, he said, no, it's Congress's fault that I'm in the position and the Postal Service is in the position it is, and he blamed his predecessors who served as Postmaster General. How do you think this finger-pointing plays in two arenas? First, on Capitol Hill, and second, how the media reports this type of finger pointing.
Yeah. Well, a couple of things going on there. I think what we have seen play out over time with this 10-year Delivering for America plan, the attitude very early in that rollout in 2021 was the Postmaster General saying, I have this plan. I know members of Congress have wanted this plan for a very long time. I can think back to some heated hearings between the former Postmaster General Megan Brennan and former member of Congress Mark Meadows, saying it to some instance, like, we've been asking for this plan, where is it? So Postmaster General Louis DeJoy saying, I have this plan, you've wanted it for so long, get out of my way so I can go implement this. That there's been so much inaction for so long. What I need to do is do these self-help initiatives, and I really don't need you meddling here and there on every little thing. And some version of that played out for a number of years. And then we got to a point where some of these initiatives were playing out. We saw network modernization get off the ground, and the Postmaster General continued to have these meetings. The 2022 Postal Service Reform Act got achieved. That helped balance the books a little bit better for the Postal Service with its pre-funding of retiree benefits. But just the numbers on that network modernization just never really panned out for members to continue to feel good about this. That from what we've heard recently is that the Postal Service isn't doing better financially. It ended fiscal 2024 with this $9.5 billion net loss. And the service is not stabilizing, that it's going down year over year. And that from DeJoy's telling on this, that this is kind of going to be where things are going to be service-wise for a while, just given the situation the Postal Service is in right now. So we may, from where I'm standing on things, it may be the end of this era of wait-and-see postal reform, where lawmakers are on the sidelines kind of waiting to see how things play out and being receptive to kind of this wish list from the Postal Service management. It, especially from this House hearing that we saw, this House Oversight Committee hearing, lawmakers are really chiming in on where they would like to see this plan go forward. DeJoy has been fond of saying, this is the only plan around. If you don't like it, I'm willing to hear other proposals, but I don't see any. And now we're seeing lawmakers, maybe not a full, you know, fully baked plan of their own, but proposals here and there really encouraged by this upcoming Department of Government Efficiency to do some of the stuff on their own.
Let me follow that up. This DOGE, Department of Government Efficiency, or Presidential Commission on Government Efficiency, because it's not really a department. How do you think a DOGE recommendations play out for the Postal Service? Because the Postal Service is an independent executive agency run by a board of governors, not run by the White House.
Right. I think that's interesting because so much of the mantra of the folks who are backers of this DOGE movement, you know, do say that the federal government more broadly needs to run like a business. And the Postal Service is this strange hybrid of a independent business, but also an organ of the federal government, that it is a federal agency, but it does carry out a mission that looks similar to a lot of other, you know, shippers in the U.S., but it does so much more than that. Of course, it has this, you know, monopoly mail business, and it can be a little strange sometimes how it does have one foot in each world. And I think, you know, there are some things that DeJoy has been very careful on as he's executed this 10-year plan. I think he's walked a very fine line with the labor side of things, understanding that there are some third rail type issues here, that he needs a workforce that is showing up every day to deliver the amount of mail and packages that the Postal Service needs to deliver. And so there were lawmakers repeatedly bringing up this movement of converting pre-career employees to career positions, nearly 200,000 of those in recent years. And some Republican lawmakers kind of scratching their head and saying, this doesn't seem like the behavior of an agency that is losing $9.5 billion a year, that in the private sector, you would look immediately to your labor and finding ways to cut things. This is, of course, a heavily unionized workforce, the postal workforce.
I mean, at the Senate hearing, Rand Paul particularly looked at the highly unionized workforce, as well as the conversion of pre-career, non-career to career positions. What struck me at the House hearing is there was talk of privatization, which I have not heard in years, and particularly one aspect of the Postal Service, that is the mail processing function within the Postal Service. I mean, there was a distinction made between retail functions, delivery functions, but processing functions was something that came up. What do you make of that?
I think that is certainly in this world of all things postal, another pretty bright red line that you saw the chairman, James Comer, kind of happily walk across and say, well, what would this look like? And kind of thinking about this out loud, because there are tens of thousands of postal employees represented by the Mail Handlers Union, by the American Postal Workers Union, who do work in these mail processing facilities. And the direction that DeJoy has taken so far is gone the opposite way. He's looked at things that the Postal Service is already contracting and trying to insource some of that transportation work, insource some of that logistics work, that he's trying to do more in-house, not less. And so just given the tone of where Congress is right now, I think it'll be very interesting to see how that plays out. But privatization is one of these things that just really does get people fired up. For a hot second back in 2018 under the first Trump administration, this was briefly thought about in a broader government reorganization plan, and it really never got off the ground because it was such a fraught issue.
Because the strongest opponents of a privatized postal service tend to be rural Republican members, ironically.
Right.
Let me ask you a question, what I just referenced. The most strident attacks on the Postmaster General and his management of the Postal Service, ironically, has come from Republican members of Congress. Josh Hawley, we heard him say something to the effect that he intends to try to kill Delivering for America plan. We have Rand Paul, the incoming chairman of the committee. We had yesterday the congressman from Georgia, Richard McCormick, raised the issue. And that's without talking about Senator Ossoff from Georgia or Jackie Rosen from Nevada or any of the other usual suspects. Does that surprise you that where the criticism, the highly strident criticism, is coming from?
Yeah, and I'll even just add to that, you know, in the open of this House hearing, even the committee chairman, James Comer, did say, hey, we appreciate, Mr. Postmaster General, that you came up with this 10-year plan, but, you know, we're not happy with the way things are going. So, yeah, it really is eye-opening, the bipartisanness of the criticism at this point, that there are people who, again, have waited years to kind of see what this plan, how it would bear fruit and how it would go about achieving the goals that the Postal Service said that it would. And, you know, there was, of course, this very pointed conversation between Congressman McCormick and the Postmaster General, where he is laying out that multiple times things, important documents that he mailed, were lost or returned to sender or just not sent on time the way that he thought they would be. And this has been covered quite extensively now at this point, but the Postmaster General covered up his ears and said in some way or in some manner of speech saying, hey, you're kind of talking to yourself at this point. I'm kind of done listening to you. And that is a very very striking moment, because these are customers of the Postal Service. This is, you know, feedback that they are offering up, and he's kind of saying, you know, enough of this already.
It's become a viral meme, I think, on the internet, that particular image of the Postmaster General covering his ears at the criticism waged by Congressman McCormick. But here's an interesting question. The Postmaster General needs a legislative fix for civil service retirement system pension reform, because he would argue, and we would agree, I mean, I'm speaking for the postal supervisors, would agree that the way in which it is calculated, the liability, is unfair to the Postal Service. He's also looking to invest trust funds in marketable securities rather than treasury bills. Both of these issues would require legislation. How do you come and ask for that type of legislation when you're covering your ears to a member of Congress and getting into an argument with a member of the Senate Committee of Jurisdiction, Josh Hawley? I mean, how do you play that?
It's certainly not helping the case at all if you're not receptive to the concerns of lawmakers that you will need at some point to get these legislative asks done. And DeJoy was, I think, more to the point about this, more blunt about this, now more than he's ever been, saying that the reason why I don't have an updated break-even timeline for you is because I don't know if or when Congress is going to greenlight these things that I'm asking for, and that they are such a big piece of this break-even goal that until that happens, I can't give you that date and time on my own, absent, you know, continuing to cut a billion here, a billion there. You gotta be on board with these lawmakers and give them a reason to care about the Postal Service and these reform initiatives. It's tremendously tough to do that if you are pushing back on their feedback when they're giving it.
I don't know where we're going to go from here. I think it's, you know, and what concerns a lot of people, I think, in the postal community, whether they be mailers or whether they be employees or whether they be the Postal Service itself, the governing board, is how the new administration will message the Postal Service and its function to the United States of America, because historically it is has been an integral part of America's infrastructure, essential infrastructure. It boggles the mind that that could all be jeopardized without pointing fingers by virtually everyone involved here. I mean, the Washington Post and other news, you know, print news media still relies on the Postal Service to deliver periodicals, particularly in county newspapers and counties, to spread the news. How do we operate in that environment and deliver absentee ballots and deliver prescription drug medication with all this noise going on?
Yeah, well, thinking back again to the first Trump administration term, this is a topic that President-elect Donald Trump does have opinions on and has been vocal about this. I think back to kind of the height of the COVID-19 pandemic, and there were talks about the Postal Service getting this $10 billion, which it did ultimately get in CARES Act funding. The President Trump at the time saying, I don't want to give this money away until the Postal Service raises prices, that this is contingent on the Postal Service doing this, a business decision that they otherwise would have to decide on their own. But the President of the United States saying, no, I'm saying this is contingent on you acting and doing these things. And to be clear, you know, we've seen more of a carrot than a stick approach with the Biden administration, that, you know, they were critical of the Postal Service not being more bullish on electric vehicles and ultimately saying, well, how about if we gave you $3 billion to buy more of these than you could afford on your own, would you be on board with that? And they said, yeah, of course. So, you know, there have been, what we've seen in the past two administrations is there be some level of influence from the administration, you know, in communicating their own agenda and some version of that playing out. So I expect that to continue in a second Trump term to some way, shape, or form.
Well, Jory, I want to thank you for joining me today and rejoining me today on NAPS Chat. This has been Jory Heckman of the Federal News Network. Thanks, Jory.
Thanks, Bob.
And I want to thank NAPS Chat listeners for logging on. If you enjoy NAPS Chat, please leave us a positive review in the podcast store of your choice. And more importantly, share NAPS Chat with your friends and colleagues. In the meantime, stay safe and stay healthy.
I'm going to stand right down and write myself a letter.